Today's mailbag comes to us from Elizabeth. Thank you, Lisa. To be honest, I'm shaking in my boots. I've started and stopped so many programs for natural health programs, organization, depression, PTSD, marriage, you name it. I love to write, and like you, I'm a vicarious note taker. Mine are on loose leaf paper and in several different binders, all labeled and indexed, of course. All the while, my house kept getting messier and messier with clutter accumulating by the day. To top it off, my husband is a hoarder and loves dumpster diving and bringing home his finds, most of which is outside, in the garage, basement, and the front porch. Thankfully, you can't see our house from the road. I took care of mom and dad. It was the full-time babysitter for my grandchildren since infancy until preschool, and now just 2 or 3 days a week. I'm depending on the grace of God to help me do your program consistently to see it through to the end of the clutter and chaos. I have 5 large rooms, a hallway, and an alcove that all looks like huge storage closets. By the way, I thought that after seeing a few podcasts, you must have ADHD, in a very good way. It takes one to know one. I've had 15 years of various trauma and health issues, and I am 69, and I am burnt out from being pulled in all different directions and suffering with chronic pain and fatigue. I'm sorry for going on and on. I'm sure you've heard all this before. Bless you and all those who work with you to make this all possible. I'm so excited about this. It's Sunday and was out and about all day with family, so I did not get the chance to start my Sunday basket. Mondays are usually the day I tackle papers, so I'll get on it tomorrow. With sincere thank you.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. When I last left you, I was sitting at the bottom of the pit of despair. All of my organizational structures at home had got up and left, and left me just cranky and sad, and definitely not someone you would want to be friends with. And I think I'm so excited to share these different periods of my life and how I used organizational systems to move forward, because you know, we don't always look at regular intervals in our life. We tend to hit the really high highs and the really low lows. And it's really those in-between years where you make the most progress. So when I first created the Sunday Basket in that first episode in 2002, like everything was going really well. I was just super busy and I needed a way to keep track of all of the awesomeness that was happening in our growing family. And in 2007, I needed those organizational systems more than ever as I was trying to hold together a family that was falling apart and take care of my father who ultimately passed away. So 10 years into doing the Sunday Basket in December 2011, you've probably heard this story before, but I'm going to share it again. This was the bottomest bottom I had ever gotten to. It started in 2007, and I just kept sliding further and further and further into the pit of despair. And in hindsight, looking back, if I had not made the changes I did in 2012, I guess I would just be in a deeper pit of despair. I don't know. We have more ability to change the trajectory in our life than we realize, yet no one tells us we do. Everyone tells us like, well, that's just the way life is. You know, life is just hard. You're just going to have to do it. Like, I'm the crazy person that just said, I'm changing this story. I can't live this way the rest of my life. So this started December of 2011. I was working all the hours, like all the hours. I was teaching in Montessori. I was teaching middle school math and science. I was taking Montessori to the nth degree. You know, I was teaching algebra, but that wasn't good enough. I had to individualize my lesson plans per student. And we just had all these awesome manipulatives and card systems. And like our school had everything you could possibly want in order to teach anything. And so because I had all these awesome resources, I decided to individualize my teaching down to the individual student. So I didn't even do any group lessons. Like everyone had an algebra book, and whatever pace you were moving through that book, I would give you individual lessons. And as soon as I knew you mastered that lesson, we would move on. If you were struggling, I would come up with more ways to teach you that skill. And so I literally had all these students at different places in the same exact textbook, which wasn't essentially required, but also we were evaluating every single skill. Like a unique thing about Montessori when it's done this way is that each child is in control of the speed at which they learn a skill. And so they can move faster or slower and remediate and all those things. And it's really awesome. Like it is basically tutoring, like group tutoring. It's amazing. I love it. I loved doing it. I loved the challenge of it. I loved the jigsaw puzzle of it. And then I was also teaching science. Now, science, I would teach in group lessons, and then everyone would do individual projects or group projects, and we would learn deeper. And I just loved it. I loved everything I was doing as a middle school teacher at that time, which is a good thing because I was sucking at everything else in my life. Like I was not a good wife, not a good mother, not a good homemaker, not a good anything. But I was learning. The kids were learning. I was having a great time. And it was the week before winter break. And so we were at the end of the calendar school year. Greg and I were totally out of PTO days, vacation days, whatever. And one of our kids was sick and needed us to be home. Actually, they needed to go to the doctor quickly. But both of us were still at work. So we were trying to figure out how to get them to the doctor and how to do all these things. And we ended up having an after-school meeting. I was called to stay after school to meet with a parent. I was like, fine, whatever. So Greg was like, I'm totally, like, we're just going to have to take this time unpaid. I have to go take care of our child. Like, as soon as you can get home, get home. I'm like, fine. So I go to the meeting, and this is definitely a meeting that could have been an email, but it wasn't. So whatever, it wasn't. So this is the Thursday before winter break. Like tomorrow is like party day. Like you don't do anything on the Friday before winter break. And after that meeting, I will never forget, my administrator said, I'd like you to stay back and I'd like to meet with you. And all I could think of is I need to get home and take care of my actual child. You know, I'm the only mother they have, and I need to help Greg, and I need to figure out how sick this child is. And time was not a problem for the administrator. So, let's review your past performance. Let's review blah, 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 blah. I don't know. Maybe I was being a smart aleck. Maybe because we really didn't need to have this meeting. It was a non-meeting meeting. Whatever. Maybe I was at my breaking point, but I was pretty professional most of the time. And at the end of the meeting, she basically just said to me, I'm not a good teacher. And I'm sitting going, on what planet? On what planet am I not a good teacher? Like, you've got to be kidding. What is the metric that you're grading me on? Like, everyone is learning. Everyone's learning at an individual level. Like, I'm there every single day. Like, I'm prioritizing this above everything else in my life. Like, what more can I do? Like, what perfectionistic scale is there that I'm not attaining? Because as far as I could tell, I'm knocking it out of the park. Like, I'm batting 1,000 over here. And obviously, no one is a perfect teacher, but I was pretty good. And I'd been told before I wasn't a good teacher because I am a perfectionist and I do have unrealistic expectations for myself and those around me. And so I'd heard this before, but at this point, it hit me differently. And I thought, no, you're wrong. I am winning at this. I'm failing at everything else. And if you don't realize that I am winning at this and I am putting it all on the line for you and your school and these students who may or may not even remember that I exist a year from now, but yet I'm not doing that for my family. Like, I'm the one out of balance here in what I'm prioritizing, not in my teaching ability. And I honestly think I was able to snap out of it at that point, right then and there, because I was 39. Like, I was ready to turn 40. And the year that you turn 40, especially as a woman, it is just like a pivotal time in your life. Sometimes it happens around 37, sometimes it's 43. But I mean, I see it in Organized 365 when people come and they're like, yeah, I was thinking about trying something different. We'd like to work for Organized 365. And I find out they're around 40 years old after we hire them, of course. I'm like, yeah, that totally makes sense. Like that you would stop doing whatever it was you're doing before and you want to be part of something bigger than you and a mission that you can get behind, something you totally do in your 40s. You just start to reevaluate things differently. So I'm in the car. I'm on the way home. It's like a 20-minute drive home. Of course, it's dark. It's raining. It's December. It's Ohio. And I called my aunt and I said, I think I'm going to quit my job. She's like, you should. I was like, all right. So I get home and it's Thursday night. So Greg's watching football, take care of the child that's sick, all of those things. And I said to my husband, as soon as I walked in the door, I was like, I'm going to quit my job. He's like, all right. I'm like, no, I'm really going to quit my job. He's like, whatever. And so I turn around, I walk upstairs, and I start typing my resignation letter. And Greg is so, whatever you want to do, Lisa. Like, just like, you can't control me anyway. So I guess he just never tried. And he's like, whatever. So I come downstairs. I'm like, no, I'm serious. I'm going to quit my job. And he's like, okay. I'm like, you have to read this resignation letter. He's like, I'm sure it's great. I'm like, Greg, I'm giving up a job where we have money. Not benefits. We got benefits from Greg's job. Like, where we have money. I have nothing to replace this money. We are spiraling into more and more debt. Like, we don't know how we're going to pay for anything. I'm going to give up my paid job. He's like, okay, fine. So he reads the letter. He goes, sounds good. So I go into work the next day. I slide the resignation letter under the locked door of my administrator. I walk down the hall to my co-teacher and I say, I just quit my job. And she's like, no, we've got to get it back. You know, you'll have a better day. It's going to be fine. Like, you can't quit mid-year. Like, what are you doing to me? And I said, I'm sorry. I just have to. And the reason I had to was because I just believe I'm going to live to be 100 years old. I mean, the women in my family, if you're not a drinker, you live into your 90s, your 100s, like, no problem. Like, we live a long, long time. I'm like, I'm turning 40. There's no way I could spend another 60 years like this. Like, I didn't see an end in sight. Like, we were sinking deeper and deeper into debt. The kids were getting sicker and sicker. Our marriage was getting more and more strained. I didn't even recognize my house. I was like, this cannot be my reality. Like, this just cannot be my future story. Somehow I got in the wrong story. I need to get out of this story. And so I did. I quit my job. And of course, it took weeks in order to replace me. And finally, this administrator who didn't think I was a very good teacher before was like, yeah, it's going to take me a couple more weeks to replace you. So I need you to work till February, March, April, like the rest of your life. And finally, I said, I gave you more than 2 weeks. I've worked 3 weeks. I will not be here on Monday. Like, I'm done. And so they figured it out. I was like, I cannot worry about your problem when you're not worried about my home life. So it was probably the third week in January where I actually ended up at home. And I was like, okay, Lisa, you quit your job. Now what? Like now what? It's one thing to recognize that you're on the wrong path and like this isn't your future story and you need to change it. It's a completely other thing to actually do something about it. And Noah's like, okay, good. So now that you quit your job, here's the playbook. Here's what you're going to do next. Here's how you're going to make money. Here's how you're going to write your house. Here's what you do. No. Now, all of a sudden, over that winter break, after I'd already quit my job, Greg was like, well, you better figure out how to make money. And I was like, okay, yeah, right. I got to figure out how to make money. Now, making money has never been a problem for me. I mean, never been a problem for me. I took the Red Cross babysitting course the day I turned 12. And then that summer, I went to the pool and I got 3 babysitting clients. Like, I just stocked the baby pool and I played with the kids in the baby pool. And then at rest period, I would go up to the parents. I'd be like, hi, my name's Lisa. I've been playing with your child, Katie. And I was wondering if you have a babysitter. Next thing you know, I'm booked solid. Like, I know how to work. I know how to earn an income. And so I fired up all the past ways I'd made money. Like, I still was in a couple direct sales companies. I had cleaned houses. I had tutored. I had done all these things. So I just started calling those people again. Anybody need a housekeeper? Anybody need somebody for tutoring? Anybody need, any of these oddball jobs that I had done? And let me just tell you, cleaning houses back then, this is 10 years ago, we charged $35 an hour. Like, it's good money. Tutoring, I mean, you charge anywhere $25 to $50 an hour. Like, it's really good money. And I was able to do this around my kids' schedules. And I knew I'd be able to cobble together somewhere close to what I was making as a private elementary school teacher, which was $500 per paycheck. Is what I was making, like, no money, $500 a week, $2,000 a month. I was like, I could figure out how to make $2,000 a month. There has to be a way to figure out how to do this. So, but the problem was that wasn't enough money. Like, I'm 40. These kids are getting older. Their needs are becoming more. We're sinking into debt. Like, that wasn't enough money. I needed to earn more money than that. And also, like, for a long period of time, not just for a couple of months, I needed to figure out how to make more money around the needs of my kids for a longer period of time. But before I could even think through that, as I was sitting there at my kitchen table, I was thinking, this house is such a wreck. I mean, it's such a wreck. I did not even recognize my own house. We'd lived there for like 15 years at the time. And this was the first day I wasn't working. So the first thing I did was I went to the grocery store because I figured we were out of things. And I just filled the carts out of, like, I don't know. That's what I used to do. So I went, I didn't even make a list. I just went, and we didn't have any money. I, like, put it on a credit card. I don't know what I was thinking. I ended up at home with all these groceries, and I went to put them away, and the refrigerator was full, and the cabinets were full, and the counters were full. And I just started laying these bags on the floor. And I'm, like, in a cold sweat at this point, going, you've taken money you don't have to buy stuff you don't even need that doesn't even fit in the house that you have. Like, every single organizational structure or schematic that I'd written for my own life did not apply. And I was like, what? Who do I know who had middle school kids, and how did they organize their house, and how did they organize their lives? Like, my inherent organizational ability got me to 40, and then it just all fell apart. Because I knew how to organize myself personally, and I knew how to organize little kids because I had babysat dozens of little kids' family. I went to college for an early childhood degree, but this kids going into middle school, going into high school, becoming adults, me becoming head of household, like, for our family because my father had passed away and my parents were divorced and our whole family had imploded. Like, I did not have a playbook for this. I didn't have a playbook for being the person that you come to our house on Thanksgiving now. I didn't have a playbook for kids being in two separate schools that are both 20 minutes from our house in opposite directions. I didn't have a playbook for me being someone that was contributing to the family income in my families of origin. All the women had worked. All the women had had jobs. But by the time the kids got to middle school and high school, the women were no longer working anymore, which, you know, I didn't really realize. And I had to do a lot of analyzation. I think a lot of times we end up getting unorganized because we get to a point in our lives where we no longer have a story that we're working towards. And all of my other friends' stories who had kids the same age, they either were full-time stay-at-home moms without earning an income, which is not going to be my story, or they'd gone to work right out of college. And so now they were, you know, in a corporation and they'd been there, whatever, 15 years, and they had a nice salary and they had PTO time and they had, and that wasn't my story either. And I didn't really have an example of someone who was turning 40 and, like, needing to make even more money, but they just quit their job. I'm like, oh my gosh, Lisa, what have you done? Like, what have you done to yourself? What are you going to do now? And I think that, I think this is really important because when you find Organize 365, you're either going, I'm a pretty organized person. I want to just glean, are there any more organizational tips and tricks I can do in order to be even more productive? That's what I would be looking at if I was looking at an Organize 365 podcast. But more of us stumble across Organize 365 when you say, I can no longer go on doing this for the rest of my life. There has to be another way. So what is the other way? And so I sat there with all my groceries going bad that I couldn't even afford. And I thought, you know what? I've got to take back this house. Like, I have to spend the next year organizing this house, getting control of my life again, figuring out what the organized story of me going forward is. Now, I had started Organize 365 because I was a blogger before. I was in this great blogging group in Cincinnati of really people who were making a lot of money. Like P&G was paying them to represent their products. They were doing all these brand deals. They had all these sponsored posts. Like, I was never successful at any of that. But I watched how other people were doing that. And the way they got those corporate dollars and the way that they successfully delivered on that was because they understood the internet before people understood the internet. So this is 2011, 2012. Like, people were blogging, and there was this group of people who had started blogging in 2009, like the original bloggers, and they were doing all this couponing stuff, and they understood how to use keywords and to rank for search engine optimization. And I wasn't smart enough or well-equipped to actually capitalize on that and make money that way, even though I kind of tried, but I just really wasn't very good at it. But I did understand that they were kind of like laying a solid foundation for their blog by having a Googleable word in the name of their blog and in all of their posts that they posted. And I was like, all right. So after I got the groceries put away, it was a couple days later, I was sitting on my bed and I was like, okay, first of all, Lisa, this is not how your story ends. Like, you are going to live to be like in your hundreds, the Lord willing. And so you need to figure this out. And I think a lot of what happens when we're in our early 40s is that we finally get over ourselves. Nobody is judging us. Nobody's evaluating us. Nobody really cares what we're doing. They care more about what they're doing. We think everybody cares what we're doing. No, nobody cares. And so I sat there and I was like, look, you know, Lisa, that you are supposed to be a business owner. Like, the lineage that you come from, the amount of women who've owned their own companies, men who've owned their own companies, like, it's basically all I've ever seen. I don't even understand graduating from college, getting a job, and going to work for someone else. Like, I don't understand that. I know that Greg did it, but when I look at my husband's story, I look at it from his stepfather who owned the company. And he went to go work for his stepfather who owned the company. I'm fascinated by businesses. I love businesses. When I was ready to go to college, my father had become a partner in the business that he was in. My mom had sold her business. And at that time, when I went to college, I wanted to create a corporate daycare center. And I wanted to create a corporate daycare center because I felt like corporations could give back to the community by providing subsidized daycare for people who lived in the community and for their employees. And so the corporate daycare center would be housed wherever it was. A certain percentage of the children would go to the daycare center from the corporation. A certain percentage would go from the general community so they could have an awesome daycare center. I was going to have a hospital also have a certain percentage of their employees' children going to the daycare center, and a bank. And so it was going to be a corporation. It was going to be like 25% of everybody. A corporation, a bank, a hospital, and the community at large. And I drew this whole thing. And the reason why I was going to do it this way is so that we could have bank holidays and so that children who were sick could actually still come to daycare. So there'd be like this little like sick area that would be run by the hospital. And like, I had it all figured out. And so I told it to my dad and he said, this makes total sense. You should do this. And I had been part of Junior Leadership Akron, which my mom had created. And because of that, I had gone to Little Tykes. So Little Tykes is a plastic, like, the Cozy Coupe car is a Little Tykes toy. It was started in Hudson, Ohio, which is where I grew up. And Little Tykes had a corporate daycare center. And they used their corporate daycare center as a testing ground for all of the Little Tykes toys. So I went and I saw how Little Tykes were created. I'm sure I'll share that in a future podcast episode I want to share with you. But anyway, I'd seen the benefit of these corporate daycare centers. And because my father owned his own company, my mom had owned her own company, and like all of my dad's friends owned their own companies, and everyone I babysat for was either a doctor or they owned their own company, like, I saw how all of this kind of worked together. And my father said to me, okay, it's going to cost $100,000 to send you to Miami at the time. And he said, I'll just give you $100,000 and you could start your corporate daycare center. And my mom lost her mind. She was like, no, it's not about the cost of the college. First of all, whose parent tells them that? And I'm sitting there going, which do I want, to start my own business now or do I want to go to college? And my dad said, you don't have to go to college to start a business. My dad had not gone to college. Like, a lot of the people he knew had not gone to college. He's like, going to college is not a prerequisite for owning your own company. Well, my mom, you know, had gone to college. I'm a fourth generation female college graduate. She's like, Lisa is going to college. I'm like, fine, I'll go to college. I'll get an early childhood degree that'll help me with the daycare. I ended up getting 2 degrees, early childhood and elementary, and my capstone project was a corporate daycare center, which my grandfather, who was an engineer, actually drew the plans for that I have in the basement. Like, I have the plans for this daycare center. And this daycare center was going to be epic, epic. So the idea was that every 3 months, the kids and the teacher would go from classroom to classroom. So instead of like you have a different teacher every year or the kids only move, I was going to do a looping type daycare where you got assigned to your caregiver and you and the caregiver kept going through this corporate daycare, and it was just 0 to 3 years old. So when you were in the like 9 to 12 month old room, the floor was going to be different because that's when you are doing all the crawling and early walking. So like you would crawl onto these different surfaces, and I had like a water bed built into the floor, just all these really cool things. So here I am sitting on my bed and I'm like, Lisa, you know, you have a million ideas of businesses that you could be a part of. You know that you love creating teams. You know that it is your destiny to be an employer, like to create something bigger than yourself and to be an employer. And you've got 60 years, so what are you going to do? So I started making a list of all of the ways that I had earned an income over the last 25 years. Babysitting, tutoring, cleaning houses, teaching, just everything. I just went through everything. I went through all my tax returns. I made a whole long list. And I said, okay, what is the common thread to everything that you've ever done? Like, what is it? What is your uniqueness, basically? Like, what is it that makes me, Lisa, unique that I could create a business around? And I determined it was organization. Like, the thing that made me unique was organization. If I could only talk about one thing for the rest of my life, that's the question I kept asking myself. Like, you've got to stop with the 9 Schedule C's and the 18 different ways to earn an income and who do you want me to be? And like, Lisa, you've got to stop that. Like, if there was only one thing, if you could just focus on one thing, what is the one thing that you could talk about for the rest of your life if you were only allowed to talk about one topic? And it wasn't going to be tutoring, and it wasn't going to be teaching, and it wasn't going to be cleaning. But in all of those, I was able to earn an income or support people because I either was organized or I helped people get organized. And I was like, organization. It's organization. So organized 365, like I could talk about organization 365 days a year. So organized 365 is going to be the name of the blog. I know that you can make money on blogs by getting sponsored content. Never did it, but you could. I didn't know I was an in-home professional organizer, but I was already being paid to clean people's houses, organize people's houses, take down wallpaper, paint, like whatever you wanted to do in a house. Like, I was kind of an expert in a house. So like, if you couldn't afford to do it, or you didn't have the time, if you didn't have the time to do it, I would do it. Like, $20 an hour, I'll take down the wallpaper, I'll repaint your kitchen. That's what I did 1 week. And I made, you know, replace my teaching salary. So as I was sitting there, I was like, okay, it's going to be organized 365. Then the next thing that I asked myself in that first month was, how am I going to get back my life? Like, basically, I had tried working 9 to 5 for someone else, and for whatever reason, that never worked for our family. Anytime I tried to lock in my schedule for an income, it never worked. But if I could just earn money in all the nooks and crannies, that tended to work for our family. So I knew that I need to earn an income. I knew I need to earn it around my children. But then when Greg got home from work, I said, here's the thing, Greg. I cannot just keep running. I cannot just keep earning all these random dollars. Like, I will not turn down any job that comes my way. I'll do every single job that comes my way. But I really need some time to get this house back in order. Until we get this house back in order, we just are not going to feel organized. We're not going to feel settled. And again, remember, he's the guy that let me quit my job. He's like, okay, whatever. Like, he's getting up. He's going to a job he doesn't like. He's working it all day. He's coming home. He's like, whatever it's going to take, Lisa, just figure it out. Figure the kids out. Figure the house out. Figure the income out. All I could do is go to work, this is how much I'm going to get paid. There is no wiggle room in what Greg's going to get paid. These are the excellent benefits we're going to have. This is why I've been working all these jobs. Everything else, figure it out. You're going to have to figure it out, whatever that looks like. So I got started. I did not start with the Sunday basket. Interestingly, I think I forgot that it even existed. And there wasn't enough money to pay the bills anyway. So I didn't start by doing my Sunday basket system. As a matter of fact, I don't even remember doing my Sunday basket system until the summer. So there were quite a few weeks there where I was not doing the Sunday basket system. But I did create multiple Friday work boxes. Because whenever I had time, I focused on work. I didn't focus on like the bills and things like that. I cannot remember why, but I know I didn't. So I had a basket for my blog, and I kept all the information about my blog in a basket with Slash Pockets. And then I had another basket, which was for tutoring. So I had a basket for tutoring and a couple people that I was tutoring. Then I had another basket for direct sales companies, and I was in multiple direct sales companies. So I was still in Creative Memories, and I wasn't earning very much money in Creative Memories, but I started marketing my custom photo album job where I could do your albums for you. And it's hard to find people that will pay you to create albums for them. But if you could find somebody who will pay for having their albums created, they usually will have multiple albums created, and it costs a couple thousand dollars for them to do that. And so that was a great income source. And I had somebody who was having me make albums. So anytime I could get any kind of job, I would just put it in a basket. And whenever I had any time, I would do those baskets. Then I sat down and I made a list of how am I going to organize this house. So I've shared before about my Colby profile, and my Colby profile is, first of all, I have to figure out that I can do whatever I'm going to do. Then I organize how I'm going to do it. Like I make a big spreadsheet, or I relabel all my Slash Pockets, or I put every single thing I need to do on an index card. Like I organize the work first and then I actually do the work. So I was trying to figure out how much work is there to do around this house. And so I remember this like it was yesterday. I grabbed a yellow legal pad and I started walking through my house and opening the cabinets and opening the drawers in the kitchen, in the kids' rooms. I went into the basement, and by the time I was done, I was like, I do not recognize this house. It's like I was in someone else's house. I didn't recognize the things that were in cabinets. I'm like, where did these things come from? Who bought them? How did they get here? Do we even need them? Like, it was the most surreal experience I've ever had in my life to be walking through my own house and not recognizing almost everything that was in it. It's like I had been on Mars and I came back 5 years later and this is what had happened in my house. And I mean, have you experienced this before? I've never experienced it since. I still don't. I mean, I'm where all the stuff comes from. So I still don't even know how it got in there without me. I remember looking at it and going, I do not even recognize these things. So I sat down. The kids at the time, Joey was 12, Abby was 10. They're ready to go into middle school. I'm turning 40, Greg's 45. And I was like, okay, clearly we need to set up this house so that it functions for these middle school kids that I'd been teaching the last 18 months. And I really feel like God had me go back and teach middle school so that I'd be a better parent to middle school and high school kids, because I literally had no knowledge in my head about how to be a parent for middle school and high school kids. Everything in my training, in my brain, was for little kids. And that 18 months really softened me up to the experience of becoming your own adult inside of someone else's home. I am such a better mother because of that experience. And I really looked at that last trimester or the last 6 years of parenting as really partnering with my kids on their uniqueness and what they were going to be. And so as I thought about that, I was like, all right, it is January. If I can get this house organized by the time we get to the summer, then I could focus on life skills for the kids in the summer, and then we can move on in the fall and we can all get organized. So I made a list of every single space in my house that needed to be organized. Each of the kids' closets, the kitchen cabinets, my closet, the whole long list. And then I use that as almost like my lesson plan for myself. And if I wasn't earning money or driving kids somewhere, I would keep going back to this yellow legal pad and I would just pick any of these areas. I'd be like, okay, it's going to be the storage room today. And I would go down and I would just get started. And I would process through mostly in that first couple of months, mostly what I did was just get rid of things. It's mostly what we did. And I put anything that was sellable, because obviously I needed to earn money, in this basement bedroom that we have, which is a fairly large bedroom. And I remember just saying, I'll price it later. I'll price it later. If it's worth, you know, $10 or more, I'll put it in that room. Otherwise, it's getting donated. It's getting taken to the trash. I went to Goodwill every week. Our garbage was overflowing for months. We had a huge garage sale. By the time we had the garage sale, I could not walk in that bedroom. It was floor to above my height, stacked full of stuff. I think we made maybe $800 in that garage sale when we had it. By the time we were done with that garage sale, at the end of April, we had still more stuff in our house than we needed, but at least I felt like I knew what was in our house. And I had gotten rid of as much as possible, but I would say I only got rid of 30% of what I needed to get rid of. And that was really important too. Like when you are so overwhelmed and it has been so long since you've seen anything organized, the first pass through your house, you're not going to get rid of as much as you need to get rid of. And what you get rid of, it will be so much. It is so much stuff that you get rid of. It is unbelievable. And I also think it's ironic that usually when you really dive into organizing your house and taking back your life, it is at a time where you don't have time and you don't have money. Like, it's extremely rare that when you decide that you're ready to take back your house and you're going to get it organized now and forever, usually you don't have enough money and you definitely don't have the time to do it. But you're where I was, where the cost of not taking back your house and not knowing what you have is greater than the sacrifice of the time and money it's going to take in order to get organized. And I remember going through my closet, and if this is resonating with you and you're like, I'd like to hear about this whole year of Lisa getting organized, then that is the book, Organization is a Learnable Skill. A couple of years ago, I sat down and I really thought through from January all the way to December of 2012, what did I do, in what order, how was I feeling, how did I actually get back on top of my home? So early in those years, it was probably February, March-ish timeframe, I decided I was going to tackle my closet. And pretty much every single Pinterest post, book I've read, printable that you can download, every single one talks about how to take everything out of your closet, try everything on, keep only the best things, you know, keep things that fit your body, blah, 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 blah. That was not my story. My story was that I did not have a lot of things in my closet to begin with. I was the heaviest I had ever been. I had been on antidepressants and then I'd gone off of antidepressants. I gained 30 pounds. I've never lost that 30 pounds. Like, the person of me before antidepressants does not exist anymore. I'm curvy. So, you know, the curves aren't going anywhere. And so when I looked at my closet, I used to have, well, I have a good wardrobe now, but I used to have a really nicely curated closet. My mom used to sew her own clothes. She went to school for fashion and design. She always looks so put together. Like, she is a really well-dressed woman. And her children always were well-dressed. Like, the company she started was the Fine Line. It was a clothing store. So I had a really great wardrobe. And I mean, in my 20s, I dressed to Talbots. Like, I mean, this is just like preppy. Preppy is kind of like how I dressed. And growing up, I did not have jeans. Like, I didn't even own any jeans until I went to high school. And in high school, I had one pair of jeans. And when I went to college, I had one pair of jeans. Like, I wear jeans all the time now. But in my growing up years in college and in my 20s, I never wore jeans. Like, I just didn't. I don't know. I just never did. I had a very preppy wardrobe, and it was a really nice wardrobe. And when my mom would take me to school, she would buy me a new wardrobe every year at the beginning of the school year. And when you're in high school and you get a new wardrobe every year, you just think this is normal. And then when we went to college, she bought me new clothes. And when I got married, this is a very old fashioned thing, but when I got married, she went and she bought me a whole bunch of clothes for my honeymoon and for my first year of marriage. Like, it's a very antiquated idea even then when she did it, but I didn't know that. I thought this was normal. And I find it interesting whenever I talk at universities and I talk to 20-year-olds, I'm like, look, you're used to getting new wardrobes because you kept growing. Guess what? You stopped growing. So these new clothes, that thing is going to end. So I'm married in my 20s. I got great Christmas gifts and birthday gifts. And then I got into my 30s. By the time my parents got divorced and then my dad got sick and then my body size changed, all those great clothes that I had, which lasted a decade, like, they couldn't stand the test of time. They were really well-made clothes. One, they were getting worn out. And two, like, they didn't fit. They just didn't fit. And I am not the kind of person that could shop at TJ Maxx. I break out in a cold sweat before I get through the second door at TJ Maxx. Now, I can go in the back and I could shop for the little trinkety things. And you could get home goods stuff there or kitchen stuff there. But I don't go in the clothing section. Like, I have to buy the outfit that is on the mannequin. I do not mix and match clothes. I don't understand how to. It does not work for me. So here I am at 40, and I'm going to go and organize my closet. And the problem is when you try everything on, and I'm not exaggerating, 3 outfits fit me. I had like 2 pairs of pants that fit me, both jeans. I had a couple of tops and a couple of sweaters, and that's it. Everything else was stained or ripped or just didn't fit. And so I would wear these stained, ripped clothes. And people would say, oh my gosh, it looks like you have a tear in your sweater. I'm like, oh my gosh, that just happened today. I said that for 3 years because everything I had was like destroyed. So here you are. You're supposed to organize your closet and you're supposed to get rid of everything that doesn't fit and everything that doesn't match and then put it all back in order, in rainbow order, whatever. I had like 10 pieces of clothing that fit. Well, you can't get rid of everything in your closet except for 10 items of clothing. It's just too stark of a contrast for your brain to process that, like, this is how poor and you are. And it was the reality. That's how poor we were. I did not have enough clothes. Now, I will say I am forever grateful that Greg has always had the same job. So we've always had great benefits, which is a huge blessing. We've always had that consistent paycheck, which is a huge blessing. You know, we were in our 40s and we lived in our house for 15 years. So we refinanced our house. We pulled money out of that. Greg has always saved for our retirement. So we had retirement money saved because he always did. I didn't start saving for my retirement until I was 47. And we had great credit because Greg had always been employed and we paid our bills mostly on time. Like, we had really good credit, so we could get more and more credit cards and we could get more and more home equity lines. And so we used credit to our advantage. But there was no money for clothes for me. And that year of 2012 was a really humbling year. And I'm so grateful for it. And I'm grateful for the time to be able to reflect on it. Because while it was humbling, it was the pivotal turning point from the Lisa I was to the Lisa I am today. I say it all the time, like, you would not have been my friend in 2011. You would not have. You would not been listening to my podcast. I could tell you that for sure. You would have not, like, no, I was negative. I was, woe is me. I was put upon. I was just not a happy person. And I just felt like life was out to get me and everything was against me and people should help me. And the truth of the matter is you can only help yourself. And that year of 2012, where I went from all the little piecemeal jobs I had always been to trying to figure out what is it that I am uniquely created to do? What can I put all of my effort into to, one, save myself? And then two, create something bigger than me going forward. I always knew that whatever I was creating would be a company that would employ people, would be something that would be bigger than something I could do on my own. So at the end of 2012, I had replaced my teaching salary. In April of 2012 is when I found out I was a professional organizer and learned that was a thing, went all in on that. So I was doing in-home professional organizing. By November, I had hired Carol to work with me inside of organizing because I thought organizing was the thing, in-home organizing was going to be the company that was bigger than me. And within a couple of years, I did have a team of five people doing in-home organizing in Cincinnati. I had realized that I could rebuild my wardrobe by shopping at resale stores. And I could go into resale stores. Some of the clothes that I still had were worth value in a resale store. So I sold the clothes that I had that were worth value. I think I got $150 for them. And I turned around, I spent that $150 in that resale store. And I bought myself like a little mini used wardrobe. I'm so glad I did that because when you're in a resale store, and this one's really small, not as big as TJ Maxx, yes, nothing matches and I'm not good at matching things, but I created a script for myself and I said, well, basically, I need to have 2 to 4 pairs of jeans. I had 2 pairs. I found 2 more pairs so that I had 4 pairs of pants. 4 pairs of pants was enough pairs of pants to, you know, make it multiple weeks with my clothing. Then I only focused on tops. Like sweaters, because I was always cold, sweaters and t-shirts. And I was able to build a little wardrobe at that resale shop. And then I started to branch out. I was like, well, what if I had a pair of dress pants? And that's where I found that White House Black Market pants and jeans fit my body the best, because I was in a resale shop. Everything was like $8. So I just took every single pair of pants in my size into the dressing room. I tried every single one on. And that's how I found that White House Black Market fit my body the best. And that's how I found a couple of other brands that fit me well, was because I was in a resale shop. And for the next 5 years, I only bought clothes at the resale shop. And so I would take my clothes or clothes from other clients that I was organizing, and I would sell them at the resale shop. And then I would give the clients their cut, and I'd take my cut, and I would continue to shop at the resale store for 5 years. And here's what ended up happening with that, which is interesting. Because I was shopping at the resale store, and literally everything was $4 to $12. Like everything was $4 to $12. It did not matter if you were wearing $110 black dress pants from White House Black Market. I paid $12 for them. So I was wearing really cute jeans and really cute sweaters and things that would cost, you know, $80, $100, $150 at the store, but I paid $8 to $12. And over the course of the next couple of years in shopping at this resale store and just continuing to take any money that I earned and put it right back into the resale store, I was able to figure out what my style was with really nice clothes that were like 90% off. And so when I was doing in-home professional organizing, I looked like I came right from a department store, but I didn't. I came right from a resale store. So from head to toe, my outfit was usually like $25. So I would go and I would organize and I'd look really, really cute instead of being like in sweats or jeans or grubby clothes. And I would be organizing basements or stores, but I didn't care because now if like something got ripped, I still would wear it a couple of times before I got rid of it. Oh yeah, that just happened today. But also it didn't really matter because I paid $5 for it. And if I wore it 15 times, that means it was worth 30 cents every time I wore it. Like it didn't matter if I wore it in a storage room. So I always looked really cute when I was organizing. And that became part of my identity. It's like I'm someone who's always dressed and looks really cute no matter what I'm doing. And now today, I actually buy clothes from White House Black Market. I'm not shopping at the resale store anymore. Although I went there last week because the stores don't have enough clothes. And I did go through the resale store again to see if I could find more. Or I've been buying some clothes from ThredUp, which is an online resale store, because there just aren't enough good clothes in the actual stores because of COVID. And so I just get dressed for the day. And I don't care if I'm overdressed. This is how I like to dress. And so this is, you may say, what's the Sunday basket story here, Lisa? In 2012, what I really did was I figured out that my uniqueness was organization. And at the time, I thought it was organizing physical spaces. And I do think that is one of my unique things that make me unique. but truly over time of developing Organize 365 and when I started recording the podcast in 2015, the unique lens that I bring to organization is twofold. One, I approach it from the lens of a teacher. Organization is a learnable skill. Anyone can learn this skill. I go back to my Montessori algebra days where like every one of you are learning and you are developing your organizational skills at different rates. And because I'm a Montessori teacher and I love individualization, I will continue to refine my messages and come up with more and more and more anecdotes so that you could see your own organization in a different light so that you are always making forward continual progress. We're never going to be done. I never promised you would be done. I never promised if you bought this certain cube system that everything was going to be perfect and you weren't going to need to get organized again. No. Organization is a learnable skill. The skill is continually refining and increasing your productivity for you in your season of life, in wherever you are in your organizing trajectory. I could keep moving you forward in that. So one is that lens of a teacher where I'm always looking at this like, what is learnable? How can we learn? How can we teach more? And then the second thing that is unique for me in how I teach organization is this idea that it happens in stages. So the organization you need as a child is different than you need when you're launching from your childhood bedroom. It's different than you need in your 20s and your 30s and your 40s and your 50s. Like, you're continually needing a different kind of organization. And this usually comes to a head when we have these unexpected events that everyone's going to have. Everyone is going to move at some point. Everyone is going to lose a parent. Everyone is going to have a new job. Everyone, like, you're going to come to these big life-altering events. And every single time, what is going to pull you out of it will be the new organization that you acquire in order to move into the new phase of life. And 2012 was me for the first time being so disorganized that all of the structures that I had put together did not save me. And time and money didn't save me either. I had to realize that I was in control of the rest of my life, and the picture that I had for what the rest of my life was going to look like was not going to be the picture that I was going to be experiencing. It was about that time when I realized our children were not going to go to a four-year college. That's all I'd ever known. It was about that time when I realized that I was not going to be a stay-at-home mom when my kids were in high school. I was going to need to earn an income. It's not what I thought it was going to be. It was about that time where I realized, you know, a lot of these pictures that I had of what was true for my extended family or my family of origin was not going to be true for me. And then I was going to have to chart a different course. I was going to have to shop at resale stores. I was going to have to provide an income for our family. I was going to need to figure out what a future looked like when you didn't go to college and then get a job after college. What does that look like? What was I even steering our family towards? And in experiencing that for myself, I became a much softer person, a much humbler person, more open to a lot of different diversities. I began to see the joy in smaller things instead of big things, having joy in the journey, not just in the destination. And I just really fell in love with how our house changes over time, like, and how we truly can create any future that we want, but there's work involved, and it's almost all an inside game. It's almost all an inside game. So as I've shared many times, the last couple chapters of Organization is a Learnable Skill were the hardest for me to write. I had 80% of the book done, and we're getting it through editing, and like, we're ready to publish it. And the team's like, yeah, you haven't written chapters. You haven't written November and December yet. And the ironic thing is, by the time I got to November and December of 2012, like, I'd been through the house twice, the kids were doing better, we'd found some new therapies and medications for the kids, our marriage was doing well, I had replaced my teaching salary, the blog was becoming profitable, the in-home organizing was very profitable, I felt like I had a purpose, I knew I could do this for, you know, the rest of my life. Like, I felt like all of the things that I set out to do in the beginning of 2012, I had accomplished, or I was well on my way of accomplishing. So why was it so hard for me to write the chapters for November and December? Like, what was it that was holding me back? And what I realized is as you age and as you get older and as you press into what the new thing is for your life or the new trajectory or what, you know, you're going to do in the next couple of decades, there is a letting go of what you thought was going to be and what you used to have. And the holidays get harder and harder the older you get. I don't know how to explain it until you've experienced it. I don't know if there's a way to change it. I haven't found a way to change it. I mean, the last Christmas, we had this great Christmas with our little grandbaby and our kids and everything. But yet the whole month of December, Greg and I just kept looking at each other and we're like, okay, so we just knew the next thing. Yeah, you just do the next thing when you're an adult. And for me, it was decorating the tree. Like decorating the Christmas tree, which I used to love to do, just has gotten harder and harder and harder the older that I've gotten, because we have all these ornaments from our childhood and from our early married years, because ornaments were the thing that we always gave each other or my family of origin gave me growing up. And as I hang each of those ornaments on the tree, I remember the year that we received that ornament or, you know, what our family was doing at that time. And that's not the family we have anymore. Most of those people have passed. Most of those traditions have passed. And it's a constant remembering of what we no longer have. And so I really had to puzzle through at the end of 2012, not just how to be organized in this next, you know, however many decades I'm blessed with, and how to organize our home for the phase of life that our personal family is in, but you almost mourn and you think about the decades that have already passed and the memories from those decades. And really, it's the future that you thought you would have. And, you know, a lot of clearing out the storage room in 2012 was running across all of the infertility documentation that I had saved, all of the documentation from adoption, like, are we going to adopt again? I was turning 40, and I'd always thought that, you know, if I went ahead and did the adoptions, that somehow I would miraculously get pregnant at 40, and Greg and I would have a baby at 40, and that didn't happen. And I'm totally, my 50-year-old self is totally fine with this, but I would be lying if during my entire 40s, I didn't expect one day to wake up and be miraculously pregnant with some, you know, third baby. And that I would be a mom in my 40s. And I'm so grateful that some of my cousins have experienced that in their 40s, that they have had these miracle babies that I thought that maybe we would be blessed with, and we were not. And that is a lot of what you come across as you really press into organizing. Like, no one is coming to save you at home. No one is going to organize your storage room for you. No one is going to process through your paper for you. No one is going to make you go through your closet and embrace the body and the life that you have today, come to terms with it, and be grateful for it. I mean, could I lose pounds? I guess maybe, but it's just not worth it. The time and effort it would require, I don't need to. I don't want to. I'm happy for this body that I have. I'm happy for the medication that helped me get through those dark times in 2010. And if the long term of that is that I'm a different size for the rest of my life, I'm a different size for the rest of my life. Many people are a different size for the rest of their life because they birthed children. I didn't birth children. So I think the process of organizing and what I learned in 2012 is just really that time marches on and nothing is stagnant. Like, there is no treading water. There is no neutral. You're either moving forward or you're moving back. And the decision that I made was that for the rest of my life, I want to be in control of how I spend my time and the impact that I have for our community and our family, and doing what I'm uniquely created to do, which is to help people get organized in different times of life, which usually is when you get to the point where I did, where you're like, there's no way. If I'm going to live for another 30 years, I can't do it this way. I need to sacrifice the time and money today so that I can reorient my life, so that I can move forward and make progress in a more organized way. And the only way to get more time is to organize my space. And that was 2012. That was the quitting of the job and the reorienting my entire life and sending myself back home in order to reclaim my life. By the end of the year, I had my Sunday basket going. I had multiple Friday work boxes going. But the biggest thing that really happened for me in 2012 was really spending every single extra minute that I had organizing every single nook and cranny of that house multiple times and processing through why I had what I had, what we wanted to keep, and who I was going to be going forward. Okay, I have one more story to share, and then I'll let you go. Another big thing that I processed through as I was moving into my 40s was that in my 20s and 30s, I'm a busybody. Like, I'm just a busybody. I love to do things. I love projects. I told you my mom's an artist. Like, there were always 18 different projects going on at home. I love it. I love it. I love it. And I, when I was processing through organizing our house, I came across so many projects that were purchased, definitely purchased. I'm really good at purchasing. Some were started, some were halfway done. A few of them were nearing completion. So many projects. I mean, 24 projects, so many projects. And I remember thinking to myself, as you get older, you realize you have less energy for projects. Lisa, you are never going to finish all of these projects. So you can continue to look at all of these projects and the money that you've spent and the time that you've already invested and feel guilty about it. Or you can let these go. And I gave myself the whole year. So by the time we got to the end of 2012, the rule was going to be that by the end of 2012, I had either finished these projects or the projects were going. And these were expensive projects. You know hobbies, they're expensive. And so I did it. I finished like three of them and almost everything went. It was so painful to get rid of all of those things. And I said, okay, Lisa, clearly you cannot be trusted to have a great idea and follow through on your great idea. So I created for myself the 24-hour rule. The 24-hour rule is this. If I want to do something, anything, any project, doesn't matter what the project is, I have to be able to actually start the project within 24 hours. So if I want to work on a scrapbook and I want to go get more scrapbook stickers, I have to be ready to scrapbook that night or the next morning. Otherwise, I'm not allowed to go buy the scrapbook scissors, stickers. Or, and this was a big one for me because I'd clear out a ton of books that I had purchased and not started. And for the last 10 years, a handful of books that I have purchased and not actually read. I said, if you're going to purchase a book, and I'm a big book purchaser, if you're going to purchase a book, you need to be able to start reading that book within 24 hours. Now, I've since moved almost all to Audible, and so my rule is even more strict for Audible because I would just keep downloading books on Audible, which is really expensive. And I said, Lisa, until you're ready to listen to chapter one, you're not allowed to buy the book and put it in your Audible cart. So now whenever I like a book, I'll put it in my wish list. That's fine. And that way you can remember what the books are. But I need to actually start listening to the book the second that I add it into my Audible. And this has saved me so much time and so much money because the acquiring of the thing is so much fun. And then the actual doing of the activity, sometimes not so much. And so that was another rule that really, really helped me clear out the storage room and all of the clutter. Like when I started 2012, or when I think back to my 30s, you couldn't go in any room in my house where there wasn't an ongoing project. An ongoing project. Because it took so long to get started on scrapbooking or sorting papers or making cards or whatever it was I was doing, that I wanted to leave out whatever I was working on so I didn't have to keep getting it out and putting it away and getting it out and putting it away. And now I do. I get it out and I put it away, or I get it out and I work on it all weekend and then I put it away and I love it. But back then, every single room had at least one project going on, if not multiple projects going on. And by the end of 2012, I had decluttered again. I probably had gotten rid of 70% of what I needed to get rid of. I had replaced my teaching salary. I had stopped doing different projects. And I had definitely reclaimed my life. I had reclaimed my life. I had reinstituted my Sunday basket. I had multiple Friday work boxes going on. It would be another 5 years before I really figured out how to grow Organize 365 in its own right, not just as a service company in Cincinnati. And that is the story I will tell you next. Habits are a funny thing. Our habits develop over time, and sometimes it's very conscious, and sometimes our habits just develop unconsciously. It's often that you could see habits inside of other people better than they can see the habits that they're doing themselves. And I love to study productive people. How are they spending their time? What are they doing? How are they thinking about things? What order do they put things in order to harness the power of their time? Over the years, as I have done that, I have created better and better and better habits for myself. And through the creation of the Sunday Basket and these podcast episodes, I've been able to make visible the invisible habits that I've created over time that have made me the productive person I am today. So if you're thinking, well, this Sunday Basket thing is intriguing, and it's interesting to see how this one habit of the Sunday Basket has moved with Lisa over 20 years in very, very different stages of life and things that I'm doing. I would love for you to try our brand new recreated Sunday Basket mini course. You can find the link right in the show notes for this podcast. So just go to your podcast player and go in the show notes and find the link and you can sign up there. It's completely free. And I would love to walk you through organizing your habits the way we do in the Sunday Basket. What do you do throughout the week in order to create a new Sunday Basket routine? It is different to put off and delay your decision making to one day a week. And so it's a new muscle that you need to create. So go ahead and download the free mini course. Or if you're already a Sunday Basket user and you've had a hard time articulating why this works for you and how this works, then invite your family, friends, and colleagues to download the free Sunday Basket mini course. Link in the show notes.